listeners, welcome to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com via the podcast. I am Zach Gandra. Here I am again with the most wonderful, holy father, Steve Gandra. How are you, Steve?
You know, I'm starting to feel really frustrated with all the BS you keep putting out on the
air. I'm trying to give you papal authority when it comes to business culture matters.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You know, popes are human.
That is true.
Yeah, popes are human.
Hopefully I get to ride in your Pope-mobile on the way home tonight. The bulletproof windows, the Pope-mobile.
The Pope-mobile is a white Mercedes G-Wagon, at least the last time I left. Bulletproof.
That is, which is not yours however.
You know, bulletproof on all fronts. You know, we sold our G-Wagon a long time ago, you know, just to move on down the road.
Yeah, just, I don't know if you guys know this, and this is totally pointless and meaningless, but entertaining engagement nonetheless, that Steve drives a 15-passenger huge van because of adopting 9 children over the last 15 years. So he's not pimping, big pimping in any way.
Got a lot of tuition. You know? And besides that, the Lexus is in the shop today.
That's right. The Lexus is in the
shop. But it's an SUV.
Hey, but the wife has a new car.
So yeah, she's good. Got a nice new
that's
car.
That's good. Well, we're excited to be back here. Remember, we want to engage with you. Remember, the podcast is on excellentcultures.com live streaming. Also, you can find that on iTunes at Biz Culture. Just type in Biz Culture Matters. We're the only one that will pop up. We've had some fantastic guests in the past, and we're excited about our guest again today. We're going round two with John Harrington, 3-time Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist. And my favorite question last week that I asked him was, so is investigative journalism what TMZ is? And he automatically corrected us right away to let us know that the garbage of TMZ is not investigative journalism.
Well, it was about the Kardashian catastrophe.
Catastrophe. The Kardashian. Yeah, it's the exactly.
Which, by the way, you.
Oh, John's on.
Yeah.
You. I just couldn't resist. Hey, you can use as a compound adjective to describe many of the things that you see in bad business cultures that you're brought in to take a look at. You could just simply shrug your shoulders and say that this is a real Kardashian catastrophe.
I think we're going to start using that in sessions with clients as soon as humanly possible.
Which is, the cult of personality has overtaken the cult of actually doing anything.
That's exactly right. And social media has added to that as well, isn't it?
But one good thing in defense of some forms of social media is, in particularly Twitter, which I'm not a huge user of, but I can see its place. For every Kardashian that's out there, there are going to be any number of people who can backlash them instantly.
Yep. There's the haters, the online haters.
Yeah, so there's a countervailing force. There's an ebb and flow like the tide that can happen right there.
Yeah.
And since I did jump in, and thanks for having me back 2 weeks in a row by unpopular demand. But you were talking about the Pope-mobile, and you know, you may have read that last week the Pope was in Brazil, the Pope-mobile was driving, and the driver made a wrong turn, and this really happened, and the Pope-mobile was overrun by thousands of people who the authorities had thought they were going to keep out of the way of the entourage.
Right.
And instead, the Pope got surrounded. And you know what the outcome of that was?
I don't.
The Pope was forced to buy a $30 pizza.
I follow the Pope on Twitter. He didn't mention that.
because the inflation rate in Brazil is so bad, there was an article
on
the New York Times about how pizzas are now routinely topping $30 for a straight cheese in São Paulo.
That is absolutely crazy.
They need Little Caesars in a big way. Well, of course, Little Caesars pizzas are probably $30. And
if you were going to go for one of these boutique wood-fired pizzas.
For sure.
That's some craziness right there. Well, John, we're happy to have you back on the show. We're excited to engage you in more business culture questions and hear more about what you're doing through Verify Research Associates and everything else. So we're glad you're here. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
Unpopular demand, the only vote that matters is Steve and I's.
Yeah, that's right. We voted for you.
There you go.
Because we know that what you have to say is valuable. You know, we were talking last week, and I wrote down, you know, some bullet points that I thought were just really critical that you said that's kind of affected our leadership in companies, you know, these days. And with the Gallup poll, you know, the 70-ish percent of disengaged employees and the 18% who hate their jobs and the 18, you know, and the most common reason being I hate my boss, you know, all of this stuff that's going on, and then the mix of technology. And where we left off last week, where you were talking about that, you know, the advice that you were giving to CEOs is that, you know, to recognize that technology is a tool, not a reflection of them, and that when technology creep overcomes common sense, and leaders start to be known as an email spouting machine instead of human beings who interact with and really lead people, that it really has a tremendous impact, you know, on culture. So, but that's happening. I mean, and it's happening a lot. When we interviewed one of our favorite clients is Jack Hollis, the VP of marketing now for Toyota, formerly the, you know, the senior leader in the VP of the Scion division, who was selected as the, you know, the best culture, the most engaged employee satisfaction culture in all of Toyota not long ago. You know, Jack shared with us when, you know, he was on the show that what he, you know, sees happening time and time and time again is that just with the intense focus on numbers and every quarter and sales and revenues, that it's so easy to forget that the reason you got into business in the first place was to serve people, and that serving your people, if you're a leader, is what makes your people effectively serve your customers. It kind of seems like, you know, those good old-fashioned, here's what made us successful in our business, kind of, I won't even call them values, let's just say habits, practices, have kind of drifted away, and more leaders are becoming technology spouters and email spouting machines. How do we change
those?
This
were coined John Harrington.
Yeah,
phrases,
yeah. How do we turn this email spouting conundrum around?
Well, I think the fastest way to do it is to slap them in the face with their lousy sales figures.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a good point, actually.
Obviously, if they're an email spouting machine and they consider themselves to be so technologically savvy, why is it that their projected growth or their hope for growth or their numbers are in decline, or they're losing basis points off their sales? They've got a higher employee turnover. They can't seem to be out ahead of the trends that can help them keep their products relevant and the rest of this stuff. I mean, that's really the fastest way to do it. If you just basically say, okay, you know, if they misunderstand every other aspect of this entire human behavioral routine that they should be thoroughly ensconced in, instead are going to be numbers focused. Let's focus on the number, you know, which is your revenue picture. Why is it that in these organizations that have become quasi-functional or dysfunctional or have, you know, eventually go out of business or have to wind up being sold and, you know, or taken, you know, into a different form from where they were, like Dell is trying to do right now with Dell Computer, how did it all get to that point? Well, it got to that point because the leadership, and I'm going to coin another phrase, they have digitally distanced themselves from their people.
Yeah, that's true.
So the only way you get to hang around with the CEO is if you get invited into some cocktail party of you know, multimillionaires.
Right.
And that, of course, just adds to the whole idea of disenfranchisement and disillusionment, this idea, like we spoke about last week, where the organizational workforce sees the C-suite as being populated by, you know, adversaries as opposed to allies.
Right.
And you know, look, the simplest way to do it is to say your operation isn't performing the way that it should. Now, of course, we run the risk of not getting engaged or being fired in my company by, you know, pointing that out. to people who don't have the intellectual capability to listen to it, or are just unwilling to hear it. And so that they're going to bring in people who are going to have meetings about how to fix everybody else's culture except the leader's culture. And and unfortunately, I think a lot of the world of consulting is now more also gotten. I mean, it's bad news when you've got consulting companies that are publicly traded companies also, because then they're all about having to rack up numbers, which means that they'll say anything to get their money. And you get sort of perpetual motion machine there, where everybody's just clawing to add to the revenue. Sooner or later, you're going to hit a wall on that, because bad behavior just leads to more bad behavior, or lack of insight leads to ignorance.
Right.
And you can pull out as many corollaries as you want to there. And so the thing to do is to break down that digital divide and to start using common sense about what it means to be a human leader.
We're going to go into our first break, but when we get back from the break, John, share with us a couple of ideas of how those leaders could do those things. How could they break the digital divide? We'll be right back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
We're back with John Harrington as our guest today. John, we were just talking about the digital divide between leaders and our participants or our team members in our organizations. Give us some ideas of how they can break that digital divide. What are some common sense stuff they can start doing?
Well, I mean, the very first thing that they can do is they can recognize what it is they're trying to sell to people. And I'm not talking about the age demographic. We want to hit men between the ages of 18 and 25 with, forget all that silliness. And let's get right down to, I'll give you a great example, and this is a very contemporary example that's just launching right as we're speaking, and that's Duracell batteries. They took a good look at about a year ago, and then they've taken it to a new level now. The who uses Duracell batteries? Who are the most human of humans? Who are the least self-centered and most giving of humans? And they would be your first responders. So firefighters is an example, who are running into buildings when everybody else is trying to escape. And they've decided they've got new ultra high, long lasting type of battery that they're just now starting to brand that is coming out, and it's going to be copper on the top and red on the body of the battery. They haven't even hit the market yet. And they're giving away something like a million of these things to fire departments around the United States for free.
Wow, yeah.
Okay, well, that ties their brand immediately to the most human of humans, somebody right. who's going to save a person's life.
Right.
Save not just a person's life, but a stranger's life.
Right.
Put their life on the line to save a person they've never met before.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing that, now, I don't even know who the CEO of Duracell is, but whoever that is, and whoever's advising that person has got this figured out. It's not about better battery technology. It's what the battery technology can do to help humans.
Right.
Great way to line your brand up, to come out of your silo and go, oh, you know, the battery business has been off in this country over the last few years because more and more and more devices are, that these electronic devices are being manufactured with rechargeables in them.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Right.
And instead of sitting around there going, oh, our numbers are declining or whatever, they say, hey, you know what? There's a way to increase our market share in the applications where a rechargeable battery like that's not going to ever really work, you know?
Yeah.
And we're, but instead of sitting around and sending out emails saying, oh, well, you know, our battery sales are down and this must be the fault of the Des Moines division, you know, in another email, they took a proactive approach to getting in and analyzing the situation in human terms. And I really think that's the advice that we start with.
Right.
Is your network isn't switches and routers and servers and cables. Your network it's your people. It's all that other stuff just happens to hook your people together.
Yeah. It was interesting. My wife works for Sephora. She's worked there for a number of years. She recently was flown to Vegas for Sephora because she's an education lead, and the CEO of Sephora was there, David Solotianu, I think I'm pronouncing his last name. And he used to be the CEO of Home Depot, and now he's the CEO of an international huge makeup company. And he was there personally, but she was most impressed with a short video they played for the group that just had him sitting at his desk with his feet up on his desk, taking camera to throughout the office and to see the people in corporate just as normal, basic people. And how she described it was, he's just a normal guy. He's not some, you know, Wizard of Oz behind the curtain.
Digital email spouting machine.
Yeah, there you go. You know, it's like, and that
do
was.
Do you remember when being just a normal guy was sort of a disparaging comment?
Yes, yeah, and now it's like.
Now it's like the highest compliment that you could be paid.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
He's just totally normal.
Yeah.
So, I want to be that.
Yeah.
So let me read you just a couple of short statistics out of the Gallup poll that I think really add huge validity to what your investigative reporting has turned up here. Only 22% of U.S. employees are engaged and thriving. When employees are engaged and thriving in their overall lives, they are more likely to maintain strong work performance even during difficult times. And then kind of a bookmark or a bookend to that, a companion to that, is only 41% of employees felt that they know what their company stands for and what makes its brand different from its competitors' brands. Now, we've just come out of a 10-year season where, you know, corporate mission, vision, values, mission statements, you know, everybody's got one. They're posted on their websites. They're framed in gold, you know, on, you know, the lobby of the corporate headquarters. Yet, I can't think of one CEO that I've ever interviewed that could ever recite their mission statement without reading it. So, I mean, what's going on that's causing, you know, all of this disengagement between, you know, people don't even know what their company stands for, let alone, you know, why it's in business. And it's not because executives and the C-suite are absent in their ability to, you know, spout their mission statements and post them and put them all over digital media and every place that they can put them. What do you find that's causing this big disconnect between my work makes a difference and, you know, my work is just work?
Well, I mean, for me, from my point of view, it's simple. And it really cuts down to the fact that there are actually two mission statements. There's the written mission statement that these people have to read in order to remember it. And then there's their own secret mission statement, which is, I need to make enough money so I can buy my own private island. Or I want to move on to another company and run that company. Or I want to do this or I want to do that. So oftentimes the leadership and the people higher up the food chain they get are not really in buying into the mission statement that they've signed off on, because it's not their own personal mission statement. And what you have to do is you got to make sure that the leadership's personal mission statement and the company's mission statement are the same statement.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's very huge.
I mean, we talk about that a lot at Excellent Culture. Is that you're not going to change a culture by implementing a culture for the business sake. You're going to change a culture for instituting a culture for the participant's sake. We're doing this for our people, not for our bottom line.
We're
it affects the bottom line.
Us.
Yeah.
All of us.
All of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're not doing this for most of me and some of you.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where your disconnect begins. I mean, and it frankly, it's so stark in some of the settings that we get into that we realize that it's better to not get engaged. We turn down business for that reason, because you can just sense, after as many thousands of interviews as I've done over the years and the personalities I've met, from presidents of the United States down to homeless people in the street, you start to get a sense for character or lack thereof pretty quickly.
Right.
And you can tell a lot by the way people carry themselves in meetings. You can tell a lot by whether or not people have the ability to focus on the conversation at hand while it's happening. I mean, I always love the person who goes to shake your hand while they're looking over your shoulder to see who's better, who they ought to be shaking the hand of in the room that's, you know, more important than you.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you had somebody shake your hand where they're looking over your shoulder to see who's out behind you that they can go schmooze over to?
Exactly.
All right, that's the famous, you know, every politician adopts that, you know, instead of looking you in the eye, they're looking through you to see, you know, who else are going to work next. I mean, they don't even know who you are.
Right.
And why would you waste your time shaking hands with somebody if you don't want to meet them? And that's all common sense, right? And it all gets down to human, real social behavior, not digital social behavior, where you see these disconnects. And you can say, well, I understand what's wrong with this business because I just met the beginning of it right here across the desk from me. Or, you know, you get into a really, an important meeting that's been called by somebody else, and the person who calls the meeting while the meeting is going on has their thumbs underneath the table in their lap, like that nobody's going to see the fact that they're texting under there.
Right.
It's the old blind texting, the double thumb thing.
Yep.
And they're the ones who have organized the meeting. And, you know, suddenly they're, you know, in the past, if you had an urgent distraction that you had to deal with, you would say, excuse me for a moment, I've got to deal with this. It's just unavoidable. And you would step out of the room for a minute or whatever. And normally, if you had a meeting that was very important, there would only be a certain set of circumstances where you could be interrupted. Usually that would have to do with like the building burning down or something like that. But now with these digital distraction devices coming into the room with everybody, they think it's okay. Well, I'm physically present at the meeting, but they're really not there. And so once you start to see that behavior manifesting itself, you know, through your sales force and your management, and it goes up into the C-suite and everything, boy, you've lost, your hands are not on the rudder of that ship.
Exactly. Those are some major red flags that are gleaming you in the face that if you start seeing that.
Yeah, because everybody's off doing their own thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though they may be physically in proximity to one another, they're not in proximity to one another at all.
Right.
And so that's when you're running the risk of of your casual weekend cruise on your sailboat winding up as a something you're reading about in the Seattle Times where, you know, the boat's up on the rocks. And, you know, you think that, oh, if it really starts to get bad, I can nip it in the bud. The instant, as a sailor, we always say that the instant you think that maybe you should be, that you might have too much sail up, you should already have a reef in your main.
Yeah, you got to be going forth and making it.
You know,
it
because if you're waiting to think you have, you know, you got too much of a press up, then you've already taken it too far.
Yeah.
And so managing ahead means knowing your people. And you're not going to be able to know them if you're, you know, tapping on your device. Like, I'll get back to what I've been saying all along. Is it's a common sense situation. You go in, you can tell the temperature of a culture pretty much when you walk into a place. It resonates from the wall. You know, you can go in, and if the place has got a bad human culture, I don't care who you bring in to decorate the place or paint it or what kind of food you're serving down in the cafeteria or whatever, if you're not addressing the key aspects of what it means to be a human being and interacting with one another to, you know, affect a common positive objective, then you're, all the window dressing means nothing.
Yeah. This is good stuff. We got to take a break, though. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Hope you're ready to hear more from John Harrington as soon as we get back. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
So we're back with Biz Culture Matters and John Harrington, award-winning journalist and investigative reporter who is telling us what this Gallup poll that identifies employee disengagement, you know, really, really means here. Kind of some more insights from the Gallup report, and then I want to ask John to comment on this. You know, the report tells us of the 70-ish percent that are disengaged, 52% are not engaged, and worse, another 18% are actively disengaged in their work, so hate their job, so to speak. Gallup estimates that these disengaged workers are costing the American economy $450 to $550 billion. That's B with the billion, B with a bit for billion each year in, you know, in our economy. Findings suggest that a link between engagement and job creation, that there's this link between engagement and job creation. If American companies, Gallup says, do not find a way to engage more of their workers, they will struggle to create more jobs, making it difficult for the U.S. to achieve real sustainable economic growth in the near future. So this doesn't sound like something that the politicians are going to fix. It sounds like something that our leaders are going to have to fix. And if if our leaders don't get real and serious about fixing it, every leader in their own business from their own perspective and their own point of view, fixing it, not just measuring it and doing more surveys until their people get survey fatigue, that our economic future in the U.S. is not a happy future. So, John, how do we fix it? How do we fix it?
Well, the very first thing I would say is you cannot legislate culture.
That is true.
And I would point to what's going on in Baghdad right now, where the idea of bringing in a quote democratic legislative process end quote was going to make everything harmonious over there, and then a few days ago they had a mass prison break of people, and they'll be back into a full-blown civil war over there simply because one culture doesn't like the other culture, and just because that you put a law into effect that says we're all supposed to get along, and we all know where that leads.
Yeah.
So forget government on the cultural front, because government is, you're supposed to live by a rule of law, and so you can have the government to say, you obviously can't be stealing from each other and doing some of these other things. But as you start to get into more esoteric, issues, regarding culture and, how people are supposed to treat each other and all the rest of this, that is supposed to be taught from the time you're born by responsible human beings who understand what the meaning of the word respect is. And all culture is nothing more than a form of practiced respect. Not conceived respect or theorized respect, but practiced respect. Because in a diverse and rich culture, everybody is respected for the contributions they make, and the idea is that because you live in an atmosphere of mutual respect, and you're promoting innovation, and everybody is invited to sit at the table of ideas, then you are going to have in that culture a much more capable environment to have sustained economic prosperity than you're going to have in a divided culture of, your haves being here and your have-nots being here, and that in-between group, which has always defined this country, shrinking now for the first time, as opposed to growing. And so there's your problem, and it's not political. It's really a culture of understanding that if you want to be successful, you have got to have a culture of engagement, not exclusion, when it comes to business. Your people in your organization need to be engaged. Now, if you've got, I happen to know a little bit about this deal that has resurrected the Hostess Cupcake Company. As a matter of fact, I happen to know the guys who bought that thing up and got it started again, and have brought the Twinkie back to the market.
It's
here,
the greatest comeback in
history.
I saw that at the store the other day. I was like,
I happen to be friends with one of the guys who bought the company.
Yeah.
All right. And
we're going to honor you just for bringing our Twinkies back.
Yeah. The recalcitrance on the part of, In this particular case, there really was an issue with the work costs and the operational expenses and so all the rest of this sort of stuff, that just didn't add up to being able to bake ho-hos and Twinkies and make any money at it the way the company was structured. But you got a bunch of people on who became intransigent toward one another and were unable to reach any kind of a deal, and so the company went into receivership, and then the people who I know bought brought it back out, and now the unions, they're not in there anymore, and so on and so forth. And so had they come to an agreement before that the bankruptcy carnage had taken place, then the concessions that wound up being made by the people who were working there would have been minor compared to the ones that the people who are working there now are getting. And yet, when you get a bunch of people who are entrenched in an organization to say, these guys are our enemies here, and you create an adversarial culture, then the chances of changing the adversarial culture around to being one where, you know, you can fix that, the longer the adversarial nature of that continues, then the less likely you are to be able to survive it. So you can either, clean house with all the management, which is, you know, one methodology, or you can, shut the place down, or you can languish or whatever. But if you want to have an excellent culture, you have to address the one thing that it always gets back to, and that's the word respect.
Yeah, for sure.
If you don't have respect across the board for each other's positions, I'm not saying you have to capitulate all the time and have some sort of out of control democracy where you run into inertia because nobody can make a decision. But what I am saying is that you can be respectful and mindful of the fact that you're dealing with other humans who also have ideas and also have things to contribute. And if you give them their opportunity, you can have an excellent culture.
You know, interesting that you should say that. One of the delightful things that I've always appreciated and enjoyed with John is that you would learn more about him if we were at a cocktail party than on the radio show, is he has an alter ego character that he's invented known as J. Swindell Johnson. And J. Swindell Johnson is a very unique fellow who has a very simple approach to solving all of the world's problems and gets it done in a very pithy yet humorous way. And oftentimes what we run into so much is these leaders who hear John's advice. Okay, you know, knock it off, get your people around the table, have real conversation, real meaningful interaction. And what they hear is, oh, here's the latest new research-proven method in order to squeeze more out of my people. So we start having these town hall meetings where everybody gets to sit around the table and talk and spout their ideas. But, you know, it's just a new technique. There's no heart behind it. So, John, what would J. Swindell Johnson have to say to leaders like that?
Well, now what J. Swindell Johnson would say is simple. If you believe you got to go down to the town hall, the only reason you should be doing it is to pay your parking fine.
You know, so true. You know.
That's right, because if you got to go down to the town hall to have a common sense meeting with somebody you're in business with, I have a better idea. Just get in the car, drive right on past the town hall, head on out to the interstate, and just keep right on a going. Because you're just, all you're doing is wasting your time and everybody else's time too into calling a town hall meeting. That's what Jason Wendell would say. I'll tell you what I want to do at the town hall. I'm going to avoid the town hall at all costs, because all the town hall does is cost me money. They're going to send me my tax notice. They're going to stick the parking ticket on my car. They're going to tell me what I can and can't do in terms of, you know, what kind of plants I can plant in my front yard. I don't want any part of that. I want to sit down in my office or at lunch, and I want to say, okay, team, we got ourselves a situation right here. This is the situation. What are we going to do about it? I'm listening. And just solve it.
Yeah, so straightforward, so simple.
I think you should add a new phrase to J. Swindell Johnson's. It just every so often he throws in a little bit of, I'll do what I want.
Yeah, I'll do what I want.
I'll do what I want.
I'll do what I want. You do what you want, then we'll both be doing what we want, but doesn't mean it's going to do anything any good for either one of us.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, so, well, no, but the reason I started that alter ego was because, you know, it's good for comic relief, but oftentimes in humor you get your point across way better than you ever do by yelling and screaming, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, the very first thing you have to be able to do is laugh at yourself. But, you know, the other group that I really like to poke a little bit of fun at in a sacrilegious manner are the legions of self-help seminar runners. You know, the thing I like about your business, you two, is that in having been exposed to what you do is you actually get in and get something done to, you know, straighten the problem out. I mean, the company is suddenly, you know, they're losing sales, their customers are unhappy with them. you get in there and analyze that and do something about it, and you turn things around, and you get the leadership and all the players to buy into it, what we call the stakeholders.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you get a result.
Yeah, warm and fuzzy gurus make people feel better, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to perform or produce any better or change anything.
We've all been to a pep rally. It's exciting for a minute, and then it goes away. We got to go into our last break. More from Jay Swindell Johnson when we come back. We'll be right back. Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
All right, y'all, we're back. We've got John Harrington on the line. This is our last segment in today's show. John, thank you for being on the show, by the way, if we don't get the chance to say that later.
Well, I appreciate it. It's always great spending time with you, too. And ever since I met you a few years ago, and I've kept a pretty sharp eye on what you're doing in it. And, you know, to heap a little bit of praise upon Excellent Cultures, maybe a few years ago, your concept was too radical because you were trying to talk about human culture when technology was all the rage. And now everybody's got technology, and what we're trying to do is to figure out how to reinstate human culture. So you're ahead of your times as trailblazers, which sounds sad but true, that you really need to be brought in to fix bad cultures. But look, I mean, it works. It works. The successes are demonstrable when you get right. People to start pulling on the oar in the same direction.
Yep.
Yeah.
No matter how hard we try to avoid it, the human element will always be there.
That's right.
Yeah, it's always there. And it's there for good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah.
So I'm back on the Gallup poll here. And, you know, and kind of the summary of the poll. And Gallup is, you know, they're wise people. They do a lot of research. They gather good information. Don't know the whole story, but who does? But they know some good pieces of it. So number one principle, they think that the survey thinks you should select the right people. We believe in that. That you should develop employee strengths. We believe in that. And Gallup is really good at using their instruments to help, you know, identify employee strengths and developing them. And then number three, they believe in enhancing the employee's well-being that we believe in. But I want to come back to that one in a second because it's typically very misunderstood and deployed wrongly. And then ultimately, you know, they believe in the power of and encourage the power of the employee-customer encounter. So I want to go back to a second to this enhance employee well-being. You know, we're in Seattle, so we spend a lot of time in Seattle as well as other places. But a few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to attend the annual Best Companies Award, dinner and celebration with the client who was, selected as a best company. And, sitting up the front table, just had the opportunity to, see a lot of companies sharing, thoughts and ideas and insights about what they did to win the Best Companies Award. And I heard, everything from, open the three kinds of beer on tap, different kinds of beer on tap, and we open the taps for employees on Friday night, to every kind of employee benefit and compensation enhancement scenario, to, we provide benefits for anybody and everybody and free childcare and all these wonderful warm and fuzzy things. But when we look at our data and our research, there was a brilliant guy years ago. I was speaking to a group of MBA students last week at one of our noteworthy universities. Fred Hertzberg years ago told us about the motivation hygiene concept, and some stuff gets people to change and move and get things done, and other stuff is just, he called them hygiene factors. They just kind of hang around and they're just there. And our research tells us that all of these warm and fuzzy, beer on tap, we got a cool culture, we play ping pong before the board meeting, et cetera, is just a lot of CRAP when it comes down to changing the culture, improving performance. That it's not about the perks that you have or the funny games that you can do or the beer that you can offer on Friday night or the employee benefits packages. Those are all good. People feel happy around them, but they don't create high performance. John, what does your experience tell you about that scenario and that, in our words, that we stole from you, the what did you call it? The Kardashian convulsion or the Kardashian
catastrophe,
the Kardashian catastrophe of now we believe it's all about, the warm and fuzzies that make a difference in performance. What is your background with the investigative reporting tell you about that going on in companies, and is it making a difference?
Well, I mean, first of all, the very first thing that I would tell you is, having three beers on tap at the workplace on Friday night is a fad, and is going to run a life cycle and not be so cool after a while and so on. It's like anything else, that's a fad. Something that would have staying power, by contrast, would be if on every Friday afternoon you gave every one of your employees who was planning on going out that weekend a $30 gift certificate to Yellow Cab.
Yeah.
So they could go spend and spread some money around that they're earning
good
with the local restaurants and help bolster that economy, but not drive home while they're drinking.
Yeah. That would make a difference.
Yeah. And would be a hell of a good time.
Yeah.
Right. Because then you wouldn't have to worry about it. Right? You're going, hey, we're going out, we're taking a cab. And, because the window dressing is window dressing. Common sense is common sense. If you've got people working for you, then let me give you some things that I know work versus the things that are nice that say, hey, that's a cool little work environment, I guess, a little perk that you got there or whatever. Okay. Google has a thing where they give you time to work on your own ideas on their paycheck for sort of like, I don't know how many hours it is a week. I'm sure there are numerous people in your audience that know that number. So you're basically subsidizing, entrepreneurial behavior in your own workforce, and they can take those ideas back and sell them back to Google. And which has happened countless times down there. That's an idea that will never go away. Another idea that I think you could put into the workplace is the idea of what I call same same. And this is something that I talk about a lot in discussions with totally disparate types of groups, and that is that most people have about 85% of their lives in common. Okay, you got to breathe air, number one, or you're dead. So that takes up a quite a bit of commonality. You've got to eat. You've got to have a roof over your head. You've got to have all the basic things that you need for survival, shelter against the cold and the elements and all the rest of that stuff, and which means you got to provide for those things. And most of the world's population is in the grips of providing for those basic things each day, and that takes up all their waking hours. The vast preponderance of humans on the earth are focused on having to do those things, the food, shelter, drinking water, breathing thing, okay? So, you know, let's say, you know, that takes up, you know, a tremendous amount of every human being's time, and then we just happen to do those things at a different level of livability than, you know, and maybe a little bit more ease depending on what economy you live in and what your location is and so on and so forth. Hey, you want to have a great culture in your company? You make sure that there isn't anybody working for you who's got to worry about those basics.
That's really good.
Yeah, really good.
That's the perk that I want. I want my my mortgage, my electricity, my food, and, you know, transportation and all these basic fixed monthly costs handled in my mind.
Yeah.
And then I want to have money left over to maybe put some away to educate my children and so on and so forth, and up the ladder it goes. And so if you are, your organization will be as strong as its weakest links. And if you make sure that you're paying your people, that you've got a good enough business, that you haven't cut your margins so razor thin that you basically have to employ people at or around the poverty level to produce your stuff, then that right there is the beginning of an issue. And on it goes from there. And so you want to analyze the well-being of your workforce. You want to make sure that those basic things that we have in common as humans, the food, shelter, water, you know, quality of life, survival thing, you need to make sure that your enterprise, if you're going to employ people, really has a focus on making sure that people can address those issues. If you can get a workforce that has those issues covered, you're going to have a hell of a company.
It's very good. I think John Harrington's one of our new favorite interviewees.
Well, you know, I was going to vote for Jay Swindell Johnson.
He's always just sitting right here next to me.
He's always there. Man, thank you. There's a lot to chew on there for a lot of leaders listening, because that's a beautiful concept and a beautiful view of business and a beautiful view of humanity that is attainable for us. Like, we can do that. That should be basic bare roots for every organization. I mean, that's really, really good. I mean, that is the taking the whole culture concept away from just what we talked about maybe in the last show, which is, you know, we're not doing things for me. We're not doing things for the organization. We're doing things for us.
Well, forget about the perks. Make sure that your people are taken care of. And then add engagement value by some of the ideas that John gave us, like the Google idea. I mean,
yeah.
You know, inspire creativity and innovation through a way that is something that they embrace and they engage in that's exciting and fun, not just playing ping pong and drinking three brands of beer on Friday night.
Right, absolutely.
And remember, perks are a relative thing.
Yeah.
All right. You know, one person's perk might be some, you know, obnoxious, you know, overconsumptive sort of a thing, whereas for someone else in another part of the world, a perk might be being able to get a one full night of sleep without having to worry about a mortar shell dropping through your roof.
No kidding.
Exactly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Exactly. We've got 10 seconds. Let's get one good quote from Jay Swindell Johnson before we sign off.
Well, I always like to use this one. If you know somebody likes to stay in bed all day long, encourage them to do so, and we'll all be better off.
How's well, that for increasing
I
engagement?
I love it. We got to go. We're out of time. Thanks you so much,
like
John.
To stay in bed, stay in bed.
Let them stay in the bed. We'll, be,
all right,
yeah.
We'll see you later.
All right. Talk to you soon. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. Check out the podcast on iTunes. Ask us a question. Let's engage and get ready. We got some cool stuff coming up through Biz Culture Matters and a competition for you guys. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.